You might think that the members of the Indiana General Assembly have already drawn lines. After all, a dispute over a handful of labor and education-related bills brought proceedings in the House to a halt and drove the House Democratic Caucus to Urbana, Illinois. But legislators haven't even gotten to drawing the lines that will shape Indiana politics for the next decade. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at redistricting. How will the aforementioned walkout affect the General Assembly's ability to draw new district maps by April 29? Will the GOP-controlled House and Senate be able to deliver on their leaders' promises to create maps based on citizens' shared interests, not partisan politics? And will an unmistakable population shift from many mid-sized cities to suburban Indianapolis fundamentally and perhaps forever change the makeup of the General Assembly? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. We collaborate with companies like Scale Computing, one of the country's most promising new companies. Scale Computing, the next generation of data storage. The idea economy is here.
Let's start with something on which every Hoosier, I think, can agree. Based on the 2010 census, Indiana will keep all nine of its congressional seats, unlike Illinois and Michigan, which will lose one apiece, and Ohio, which will lose two. I suppose we can also stipulate that most politicians, regardless of party affiliation, say they want fair, logically drawn districts. The problem is, fair and logically drawn are in the eyes of the beholder, and given that Indiana's district maps have traditionally looked like something out of a Rorschach test, disagreements are all but inevitable. Joining me to discuss the high-stakes process of redistricting are Democratic Senator Tim Lannan of Anderson, the ranking minority member of the Senate Elections Committee, Republican Senator Brant Hirschman of Lafayette, the Senate's majority whip, and, more pertinent to this discussion, a member of the Senate Elections Committee, former State Representative Dave Crooks of Washington, now co-chair of the nonpartisan Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission, which is holding hearings around the state, and Michael Pitts, an associate professor at the Indiana University School of Law in Indianapolis, and a former U.S. Justice Department official who focused on enforcement of the Voting Rights Act. And I thank you all for being here for this discussion. You know, I know you all want to talk about how things should be, but let's start as a base point how things are and how they have been in Indiana. Todd Rokita, former Secretary of State, now newly elected member of Congress, he got a lot of attention talking about redistricting and earned, frankly, a lot of enemies talking about redistricting. But he likened redistricting in Indiana to the Wild West, said it's lawless. There really are, you know, no guidelines. Tim Lannan, let's start with you. Is that a fair assessment of Indiana when it comes to redistricting?
Well, I guess it is when you take a look at the fact that really in Indiana, the only statutory criteria we have is that the districts be contiguous. And
in other words, you can't have a little bit here and a little
bit
there.
Right, you can't separate out, you know, parts of the district. Other than that, yes, there are, of course, some federal law that interplays, but as far as Indiana state law goes, very, very little guidance. There's always some discussion about, you know, preserving community of interest and contiguity and obviously and compactness and what have you. But basically, in Indiana, of course, the Constitution says that the legislature shall draw or will draw the districts, and that's the way it works. They draw them, and pretty much the party in power, the parties with the majorities in either house, either chamber, they draw them. They have the ultimate say, and they draw them the way they wish, basically.
And Brant Hirschman, Wild West. Now, your district, if you look at District 7 up there in your part of it does look like California. It is kind of west. It looks like a western state. Covers what? It's part of six counties.
It does.
And it's not as odd as some of the lines that you can find on the district maps for the Senate, but it's a big district. How do you buy, this notion that it's lawless out there and too much so?
Not really. My district is a great example of some of the factors that come into play in drawing a district. It's not simply geography, which is the only thing you see on a map. It's things like communities of interest, economic interest, people who have similar commuting patterns. My district is one of the larger in the state, but it also shares a very strong rural and agriculture-based character. And for Indiana's farm community, they'd like to have a legislator who has common interests with them and neighbors in their district who have that commonality of purpose. So I think the trap many people fall into is when, while it may look like a great public relations campaign to draw straight lines on a map, you also have to understand that the communities in this state are very different and diverse, both economically and racially, and we operate under a number of federal guidelines as to how those lines have to be drawn. And one of the things that makes the lines the craziest, on the congressional side anyway, is the requirement that there be almost no variance in the population between each of the districts. So in today's computer-driven age, that allows us to draw some very crazy lines, but it does serve to meet the purpose espoused by the federal government in terms of lack of variability.
And I do want to talk about some of those federal guidelines because in the absence of a lot of state guidelines, those are in many ways the guiding force for some of these proceedings. But let me talk about briefly one other rule of, or at least rule of thumb, that we've seen over the years. And Dave Crooks, that is, traditionally at least, that, for lack of a better phrase, to the victor goes the spoils. And if my party wins and I control the House or the Senate, I'm gonna make those maps and draw them in a manner that I'm gonna ensure that my brethren have a good shot at either winning office or retaining office. Is that fair?
Well, it's true, but in reality, though, in Indiana 10 years ago, the maps were drawn as strongly Democrat as we could possibly draw them in the House, but at best, you could only come up with about 43 to 44 districts. So that does show that Indiana still is a Republican-leaning state. You see what's happened over the years in the state Senate, where now you have a supermajority for the party in control, and that'll probably stay that way for a while, or at least it'll be very difficult for the Democrats to have a fighting chance to ever be back in the majority in the Senate. So this is really seen as the incumbent protection program behind the scenes. When the map-making process is underway, those that are entrenched in these districts try to find ways to improve them, no matter if they're in the majority or the minority, and that's the kind of thing that the Redistricting Commission, at least from a public standpoint, is trying to bird dog the process to make sure that there's no obvious gerrymandering going on. It's bound to happen no matter who's in charge of the drawing, but we're trying to make it at least as fair as possible and make sure that Hoosiers can at least see that this is a transparent process.
You've referred to it, I believe, as candidates under the current approach, candidates choosing voters as opposed to voters choosing candidates.
Absolutely, and a lot of people have used that quote over the years, but there's a lot of truth to it.
Mike Pitts, let's talk about the guidelines, the rules. The contiguous districts, we talked about that. Equal population, we talked about that. Federal government, what else does it mandate of the state in terms of the way districts are drawn and steps to avoid, for instance, the disenfranchisement of minority voters?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say, instead of the Wild West, I would refer to redistricting more as the dark arts in Harry Potter. it's much more like that. And Indiana really is not unique in that regard. I mean, gerrymandering happens all over the country in relation to electoral districts. So Indiana is not something that's different from what goes on in the rest of the nation. Yes, contiguity is a potential constraint, but you know, contiguity can be small, you know, 50-foot corridors between two disparate populations. So contiguity isn't much of a constraint. Equal population as a constraint on gerrymandering is a little bit of a constraint, but not very much. You can draw very gerrymandered districts with no population differentials between them. There are requirements from the Federal Voting Rights Act for the protection of minority voters. In Indiana, we're typically talking about African-American voters in the Indianapolis and up toward the Gary Lake County area. But other than that, there are very few constraints on lawmakers in drawing these plans. And that opens up tremendous discretion to do whatever they want.
And even, correct me if I'm wrong, but even if a Justice Department official, one of your colleagues or former colleagues, says this district doesn't look quite right in terms of minority representation, the courts may or may not heed that call for action. I mean, courts, do they not generally give a lot of deference to General Assemblies in drawing these districts?
Courts typically do give a lot of deference for political reasons and in terms of the racial divisions. However, the Voting Rights Act is one of the ways that you can have a successful redistricting case, one of the few ways that you can have a successful redistricting case in the court system. And, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised, and this is looking sort of forward in the process, but based on the way Indiana has developed in terms of Republicans controlling the process, it wouldn't surprise me if Democrats ended up filing some kind of lawsuit and a Voting Rights Act claim was a part of that lawsuit in the future.
So regardless of how deliberations in this session turn out, we may end up in court yet to see the final judgment on this. Let's talk about this session. I mean, as we tape this, the majority of the House Democratic Caucus is still holed up in Urbana, Illinois. That has brought proceedings in the House to a halt since, I think, what, February 21st. Sort of has put a lot of things on the back burner, including redistricting. How do you think, Tim Lannon, will the walkout affect the General Assembly's ability to produce and approve these maps in a timely manner?
Well, you know, I mean, the longer it goes on, I suppose the more pressure that it puts to get the job done, obviously, just because you know, we're running out of time, basically, to do that and a whole host of other things. But aside from that, I suppose there's also the issue of traditionally the idea of walking by a minority is oftentimes reserved for when those maps actually are produced by the majority party, and how that impacts the House Democrats' ability to do that if they do come back at some point in time. You know, I'll leave them to decide how they handle that, but I would think that it certainly makes it a little bit more difficult to walk at that point in time. Although, you know, if you've walked once, maybe what's the harm in walking again, especially if, depending on how egregious the maps are drawn, I suppose, at this point, and how it plays out in terms of you know, well, you're going to walk? Well, look at these maps. We'll give you something to walk on. I don't know, but I think it could complicate things.
Well, let's pick up on that, because that's an interesting point. If you look at the history of walkouts, I think Senate Democrats who didn't like the maps in 1991, right, they walked out. House Republicans in 2001, when they were the minority and didn't like the maps, they walked out. Now we have this other non-map-related walkout. How about this, Brent Hirschman? Does that make it tougher for Democrats to walk out if, in fact, that's the time-honored strategy for showing frustration over maps?
Well, I think it might. You know, traditionally, a walkout has been the ultimate tool, the last resort, as Tim mentions. And I think it's important to say, to the Senate Democrats' credit, that when the House walkout occurred, we were busy passing bills in the Senate. I think we moved 73 bills the day the walkout occurred. And we've traditionally been able to find common ground on a lot of issues, including maps. Are they the same as would be drawn if another party was in power? No, probably not. But we have tried to establish a collaborative working relationship. And I think it shows that a foundation for collaboration can occur. And I'm hopeful that emotions calm down and that kind of effort can be restored, yeah, in the House. I know we all want to be here and do our job.
Can I just add one thing to what Brent said there, and that is, I do hope that we have a little bit more of an opportunity to maybe see that the maps are competitive. I think we're seeing, not only in Indiana but in other states here, where supermajorities have taken over, and it leads to a lot of contentious issues being introduced and considered within the various legislators, and maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't know,
but because the argument is people feel that their base is their base,
yeah,
and
right,
they don't have to answer to the middle,
right,
of the road effectively.
But it seems to, in my opinion, sort of lead to less of a bipartisan approach to formulating public policy, and more of a we've got the power, we're going to do what we want to. And I'm not so sure exactly how good that is for democracy. So I'm thinking if we can sort of look at the competitiveness of the various districts, I think that's allowed, and I think that is not a bad goal public policy-wise.
If you look at the last cycle, I think about one-fifth, give or take, of the House and Senate were unopposed, incumbents were,
right,
unopposed.
True, but if you look at the 60-40 majority in the House of Representatives right now, that's a 60-40 Republican majority under Democrat-drawn maps. My own district is marginally Republican, but was represented by a Democrat for 16 years. And I give the voters a lot of credit. While you can probably have some impact on the outcome of an election by virtue of the maps, it ultimately boils down to the candidates and the views of the people on these issues. And we've seen that happen with Republicans drawing maps in 90 and the House going to Democrat control at that point. So I don't think it may be a dark art, it may be the Wild West, but I don't think it's as foregone a conclusion as maybe some pundits think it is.
But one thing that should be said, though, and when it comes to redistricting, I remember in the last election, 2 weeks prior to the election, all these national political pundits on cable shows were saying, my goodness, as many as 90 to 100 of 435 congressional districts may be in play, and people were just stunned. But I think our forefathers imagined that every election cycle, all 435 congressional races would be in play, and perhaps 150 legislative races in Indiana. But what redistricting has done, it's narrowed it down to where in the House there's only about 12 seats that are normally in play. In the Senate, they usually only target a very small handful, right. And it means that 80% of these seats are never in play, which makes it more less expensive, rather, for marketing and advertising, is what the caucuses behind the scenes don't really talk about.
And that's one of the things, I presume, that has prompted you and others to come together with this redistricting commission, this nonpartisan independent group that you're co-chairing. Backed, I believe, by AARP, Common Cause, and the League of Women Voters. You're having hearings around the state. You're not waiting for the proceedings to take place. You're having your own proceedings.
Exactly.
What do you want to get out of that?
It's kind of a civics lesson to a certain degree, trying to make sure that Hoosiers are more aware how this process works, because it only happens every 10 years. But even though we understand we're not going to have any kind of final impact on the redistricting, we at least want to show that, hey, this is how the process works. You need to get involved and make sure that if your community has been divided because of redistricting for political purposes, it's time for you to step forward and say, hey, don't split my community of interest up just because it might help a particular Republican or Democrat gain a slight advantage in the next election. We really should keep these communities of interest together.
And Mike Pitts, is that going to have an impact, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure that it's going to have that much of an impact on the process. It's a laudable goal, and I'm an educator, so I'm always interested in educating the public. But the bottom line is that the politicians are in control here, and it doesn't seem like redistricting is something that really registers with voters later on. And even if it did, the lines are typically gerrymandered in such a way that even if the voters cared that much about it, it's unlikely to really register. I would say one thing about competitive districts, though. It would be awfully difficult to draw 150 competitive legislative districts. True. In the state of Indiana. There's only a certain number of legislative districts that you can have that are going to be competitive because of just the way the geography works. You could gerrymander the lines radically, probably, to create lots of competitive districts, but people who vote alike tend to live near each other, and that seems to be more and more of a trend, at least in the political science literature that I read. And so it's hard to make every district competitive. There are only a certain number that you can have that are competitive.
You know, you mentioned the voter apathy. I ran across a bit of Pew research from, I think, 2006. It said 70% of, and this was nationally, not just looking at Indiana, people aren't interested necessarily in district boundaries. So that is, I guess, a high hurdle in terms of public education to deal with. Let me ask you one more legal question. If these guys can't get the job done, I mean, do they have to get it done by the end of this session, or can they, in fact, go into special session? Can they, in fact, do it during the short session and legally in 2012?
Well, certainly, if the congressional districts aren't done by the end of the regular session, then there will be a commission that will be appointed. Essentially, that will be all Republicans.
It's a five-member commission, because of the makeup of the House and Senate and the governor's office, all Republican issues.
Correct. And so there will be congressional districts, undoubtedly, I would think. In terms of the legislative districts, I don't believe that it has to be done this particular session. It could be done in a special session. The clock that ticks on the legislative districts is the next election that's going to come up. And if a plan can't be created by the next election, well, then the courts are going to step in and equalize the population for the legislature.
Tim Lana, does it get done this session, or are we already thinking that 2012 is looking pretty good in terms of tackling this issue?
Well, I don't have that lot of a pipeline from Urbana, Illinois right now, so I can't say for sure, but I would think we in the past, I believe, they've gotten, in the most part, even with some, you know, temporary walkouts or whatever, they've got the job done. I'm anticipating we'll get the job done, you know.
Brian Hirschman, what do you think?
I think so. I think there's a common interest on all districts that are fair and preserve communities of interest. And we've been able to do that in the past. I think we'll be able to do so again.
And as Mike Pitt suggested, in some fashion, by the next election, there will, by hook or crook, be district maps. One thing that, regardless of the politics, the numbers are the numbers from the 2010 census. And some of those numbers suggest that there are significant population shifts in Indiana, and some of the former mid-sized industrial communities of the state have lost significant amounts of population during the past decade, as suburban Indianapolis has gained. Dave Crooks, how does that fundamentally change the makeup of the General Assembly in terms of more of an emphasis on urban and suburban interests as opposed to rural?
Well, you look at Lake County, for instance, they lost a significant amount of population in the past 10 years. So if you're the Republicans in the majority and you know you're never going to really draw a Republican district in Lake County due to the obvious composition, you at least might be able to eliminate a district in the House, for example, in Lake County and start moving toward the southeast. Then you look at Switzerland County, which we never think of Switzerland County as a booming area, but yet the census shows there's been an extreme amount of population growth in that area because of the people that moved out of the Cincinnati area looking for more of a rural setting, and most likely those people tend to vote Republican. So eliminate one perhaps in Lake County that may be a Democrat seat, add perhaps somehow a Republican seat in Switzerland County is a net gain of two for the Republicans.
And Mike Pitts, the notion that there might be the elimination of, say, a Lake County seat, that supports your suggestion that a court challenge is likely here, because could that be framed in terms of disenfranchising minority voters?
It could be, depending on whose seat gets eliminated. If it's a seat that is controlled by African-American voters currently, then that raises the potential for a Voting Rights Act challenge, certainly.
All right. Well, a lot to chew on, and we'll be watching closely as the session progresses. Thank you all for being here. Again, my guests have been Democratic Senator Tim Lannon of Anderson, Republican Senator Brant Hirschman of Lafayette, Dave Crooks of the nonpartisan Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission, and Michael Pitts of the Indiana University School of Law at Indianapolis. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, is this the year Indiana winds up with some of the nation's toughest restrictions on abortion? And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter, Indiana Legislative Insight. Ed, bottom line, does gerrymandering work? I mean, does it actually yield the payoff, the dividends that parties think it will?
Sometimes it does, John, and other times it doesn't. And that can even be within a given decade of redistricting. You know, Senator Hirschman said he was elected in a district that was drawn by that had a Democratic lawmaker for a number of years. And if you go back to 1981, Indiana had what the Democrats then said was confirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court to be the most partisan redistricting plan in the country. A guy who just left the Indiana Supreme Court, Justice Ted Boehm, argued for the Indiana House Democrats before the U.S. Supreme Court that this was unconstitutional. There was absolutely no way that they were going to ever be able to be a majority party under those maps. Well, by the end of the decade, they had 50-50 parity in the House, and still under those maps in the final election of that decade, they had a majority of the seats. Then they took over the redistricting process in 1991, kept the majority in 92, and lost it in 94. The same thing happened this last decade. The Democrats drew the maps, and then 2 years later, they were out of a House majority. So the voters are smart enough to see through things, and the voters also can see if a party is perhaps overreaching, as maybe they thought the House Republicans were back in the 1980s with those big majorities, and they can correct that electorally.
You mentioned the Supreme Court battle back in the 80s. I think it was finally about 1986 that the Supreme Court said, "We'll let them stand. We're not going to throw out the maps. They're okay as drawn." Is that indicative? I was asking during the roundtable about the propensity of courts to keep hands off. Is that what we can expect if, in fact, there's a court challenge, as was suggested by Mike Pitts during the roundtable?
Well, Professor Pitts is certainly the expert on it, and he understands that there are standards that the courts require you to abide by in terms of population variance in particular, but then also to a certain extent in compactness and contiguity and protecting communities of interest. And these are all things that legislators have to keep in mind as they do draw these maps. It's not like they've got this totally unfettered process that they can just kind of waltz in and draw maps from not dealing with any kind of baseline standards. They have to adhere to certain kinds of legal niceties.
How does this all shake out? At some point, the minority caucuses, I guess, just sort of have to say, hey, we lost in the last election.
Right. There are going to be maps. You know, obviously, as you heard during the roundtable, the congressional maps can get drawn by a commission, but the state legislative maps will be drawn by the legislature.
And that's a constitutional obligation under the Indiana Constitution.
Right. It doesn't have to be done this session for the legislative maps. It can be done, actually, through 2012. But the legislature will do it, and I'm sure that the Democrats will be back at some point. And I remember back in, I think it was 91, when the Republicans were in the minority, they understood that they were going to lose. And the then Republican leader just told his members, hey guys, you know, just think of it as a liverwurst sandwich being passed around the caucus. Everybody's got to take a bite of it and pretend that they enjoy it and just go on and you've been fed.
Did you really say liverwurst? Some kind of sandwich. All right. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate your insight. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. Take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.